Welcome to the Round 13 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined back by Faz.
G'day, guys.
And Bryce.
It's good to be back, I think.
I love that you qualified it with I think.
Good.
We've had Mark escape for another week because he's had another poor score. So you can tell things are not going well for him. Let's, as we do each week, whip around the table and catch the community up with how we went. Of course, first bye round, first of hopefully not too painful series of 3 weeks. I know for myself, next week's certainly getting worse. So this week was pretty tame for me in terms of the outs. So considering that, I was a little bit disappointed with my score. I scored 1984 for the week, which isn't bad. I think it's just about keeping pace. I moved out up about 2,000 spots to 10,802. Next week, my side is completely decimated, though, and I'm still under a reasonable amount of pressure in round 14. So it's not a bad score, but I've got to keep it in perspective. I've got 3 more weeks to run out, but I traded pretty aggressively toward, in fact, round 12 players, including some rookies, who we'll get to in a little bit. So, yeah, all things considered, not too bad. Faz, how'd you go?
It was a pretty poor one for me, but I'm trying to look at it as sort of a cumulative, you know, one round across three type thing. So the ranking slipped a bit this week with a score of 1853. I was reasonably hard hit by the buys and decided to take on a bit of advice that Moosey was giving in last week's podcast. He said, you know, it's not all about trying to get, you know, moving heaven and earth to get 18 players on field. So I decided not to make the downgrade to get Rotham into the team, which I think I'm pretty happy about with his score of 40. But the rest of the team was pretty hard hit, relying on guys like Answorth, Oscar Baker, not a great score, and Noah Bolter. I know you got rid of him this week, Marcus, and you'd be feeling pretty happy about that with his 29. So pretty poor week for me, but I think most of my pain's out of the way. At least I'm hoping that. And we can be on to bigger and better things in the next 2 weeks of buys. Bryce, did you take the cake this week, or are you split in the middle?
I split the middle. I think I just pipped you by 5 points this week, scoring 1858. So my free fall, unfortunately, continues. So I think not so long ago, in round 8, I was ranked around 2,600, and I've just been in free fall since then, copying multiple injuries for 1 or 2 weeks. So I've gone from a reasonable rank down to 6,000, 17,000, 26,000. I've stemmed the flow a little bit, ranked in 27K at the moment, but I know there's others which are copying it worse than me, so I can't complain too much. Hopefully this is the poor week of the buy period for me, and I'm fairly well placed for the next two. I've did a couple of trades this week, trading out Hanley and Hayes to Sicily and Naish. So Matt was pretty happy with Naish's first score in my team, and picked up Sicily in preparation for this round. But it was really hit with some poor scores from Answorth, Petrocelli and Smith. So looking forward to getting them out of my side as soon as possible. But yeah, luckily it's a short week and we can kick off on Thursday for the second bye round.
Yep, that's a good and timely reminder, Bryce. Thursday night's game this week is Adelaide versus Richmond. So don't forget, if you're doing any pre-trades or playing around with your trades, please do reverse it prior to the Adelaide-Richmond game. Otherwise, you'll be surprised and locked in for another round. So I think it's been a while since our last Thursday night game. They queued up a few at the start of the year. Next week in round 14, there's another Thursday night game. Same in round 15. And then round 16, we return to normal. So we'll be heading into Thursday lockouts for the next few weeks.
A few short weeks ahead.
Let's go to a quick group update before we get to some questions. Our public group is being led by Michael's team, Break a Leg. He moved up from 22nd into the top 10, sitting at 9th. So big shout out to Michael. In terms of our Patreon group, our leader there is still Aiden's team, the Stargazing Goats. And only 72 points behind him is Nicholas's team, the Revolution. We'll continue to monitor that tussle at the top of the Patreon group ladder. Let's get on to some questions now, and we're going to start with the rookies this week. And the first question we're going to answer is from Richie Young on Facebook. Is it silly to contemplate any rookies that aren't on the bubble this week? Gardner, Naish, and Clark being three of those. There are not many on the bubble at all this week, and think most will be struggling to field 18 without potentially doing this. So probably the one that hasn't been mentioned so far, and the main bubble boy for the week is Brett Bewley. Apart from him, though, Richie's absolutely right in terms of the options being pretty scant, especially those that are on the bubble. I know last week I actually traded in Gardner and Bewley into my side, so I've already gone early on them. And so I guess my answer to Richie would be that no, it's not silly, but what I'd be aiming to do if I could would be still to trade in players that are fresh off the round 12 bye. So I prefer Gardner, I prefer Clark, and I prefer Bewley, because they're all buy free as opposed to Naish, who you're going to get this round but will be off again next round. Of course, depending on your buy structure, that may be not so relevant. So why don't we talk about some of the rookies, though, in a little bit more detail. Brett Bewley, he's one that you've had in your team from the start. Bryce, is that right?
Oh, yeah, my boy Bewley.
Yeah, your boy Bewley. Well, I see on the injury list that Stephen Hill is listed as a test this week, and he will potentially be available for match committee selection. Now, that has me a little bit worried, but I'm thinking that it's unlikely Stephen Hill comes back immediately without at least having a little bit of a run around in the resis. So I don't think he's a big threat this week, but certainly something to keep in mind. Even if he gets named this week and Hill stays out for another week, in the sort of short-term future, there is some question marks over his job security. How do you think that will play out, Bryce?
There's also another guy running around the twos as well, Harley Bunnell. There's rumours circulating about when he might get a chance in the AFL side. It's tricky at this time of year. The rookies that we are bringing in, we want to be holding for most of the second half of the season as bench cover. These guys are going to be in and out or out of the side later in the season. It might cause us trouble, but realistically, we pretty much have to take the best of a bad bunch, and Bewley looks like a pretty good option, if not the best option on the bubble this week. He'll be buy free when he comes into play this game this week, and I think that you probably have to select him and probably select him ahead of Gardner, who you can pick up next week. I've got him in my side already. I would probably bring him into my side over someone like a Dylan Clark, who may be in and out of the side. So the danger, if you went for someone like Clark, is that he plays the game this week and then he's out of the side the following week. I'm not particularly confident on his job security.
I think the problem with Clark is more the returning players from injury. I think they've got Stringer coming back.
You've got Dylan Shields were the big one.
Shields coming back. And I mean, Myers self dropped himself. You'd think at some stage he's going to put midfield pressure on as well.
Orazio forward, but plays a little bit of time in the mids. So there is definitely selection pressure on.
There was an actual article out today saying that as well as Clark played, or I don't know if it was a quote, but Woosha was basically saying as well as Clark played before the bye, he's not guaranteed a game this week. Mm. With the blokes that are coming back, we don't know where exactly he fits, and they might not play a tagger every week. They'll play a tagger based on structure, but that they may still find a spot for Clark even if he's not a tagger. Mm. So
yeah,
potentially good in that he might play just because he's good enough to make the 22. Not so good in terms of has not been confirmed job security. Definitely under risk with other players coming back. Plays a role that they don't necessarily, or played a role well in his last game that they don't necessarily see like being required every single round. So just things to keep in mind. He's also 147K, comes with a price premium. And even though he did score quite well playing that tagging role, if he's then relegated to another role, you don't know if that role will be worth necessarily that extra price tag. So he's one that's definitely a bit riskier for mine.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Dylan Clark. He's not the best user of the football, and I think the conditions played into his score a bit in round 11. It was a very wet game, and it was sort of one of those just grab the ball and bang it long type games. And so a player who has, you know, not the silkiest skills can do pretty well in a game like that. And as you mentioned, that there would have been quite a few points just from tackles and the work he did on Cripps. I think we'll get a good chance to see if he does get named this week. We play Hawthorn at Marvel Stadium, so better conditions obviously in the indoor stadium, and probably not, can't think of anyone off the top of my head that Essendon would be looking to tag from Hawthorn's team, so he might be playing a different role. So if you do have the luxury of not having to bring in Clark this week, I would definitely hold off a week to see how he does in his second game for this season.
Yeah, I think if you're going to go a week early on a player, you'd prefer to go on a basement price player. And I think Gardner, Clark and Bewley anyway is probably my standout candidate. I think in terms of job security, he's probably got the most secure position. He plays that tall role, came in basically the week after he got drafted, got talked up in terms of having, you know, good career prospects at the Bulldogs immediately after the game, tackled well, presented well, had three shots on goal before the bye. So, yeah, I'm a big rap on Gardner as number one trade-in option for the week. And, you know, if you've still got a Burgess or Moore type continuing that flexibility in terms of being able to pivot the twos, pretty cool as well. Then I've got Bewley next, Clark third, and Nash a clear fourth. You wouldn't bring him in unless you absolutely need someone this week. You don't need someone next week, and you potentially already have Gardner, Bewley, or, you know, a combination of Gardner, Bewley, Clark don't get named for the week. Yeah, I'd be really highly reluctant to bring in a player who's not on the bubble a week early running into the buys the next week.
Yeah, one final name I might just throw in the mix, and it's not a particularly good pick, I don't think, but Robbie Young from St Kilda. He's already played his third game, but thanks to his horrible scoring, he is only at 139,000. So if you're desperate for a downgrade in the forward line and you potentially you may have gone a week early on Ryan Gardner, he's an option if he can hold his spot in the side.
Yeah, just something else to keep in mind with Naish. They've been absolutely decimated with injuries. Richmond, and you'd expect the players to come back through their side in the second half of the year as they make a push toward final series. Naish, just the weekend that's passed, seemed like a replacement off the back of Ellis also going out.
Yeah, Vlosten's out of the side right now. Broad got dropped. We'll probably come back in pretty soon, I'd say. So reasonably sketchy job security, I think, for Nash.
So to wrap up the rookies, we've got a question here from Blue, one of our patrons. If Bewley and Gardner aren't picked and there are no other downgrade options, should we get them anyway? So this is tough, right? Like, if Bewley and Gardner and Clark all don't get named, and you need a downgrade so that you can fulfill one upgrade, do you take Naish? Do you take a bloke that doesn't play? Like, how far do you go this week in terms of trading in a non-playing player, likely delivering you a donut, so that you can continue your long-term upgrade path of still progressing your team? Where do you sit on that?
I guess if I'm going to be bringing in a non-playing player, I'd want him to be at the basement price. So if I'm going to be conducting that type of move, 102K defensive forward swing player is probably where I'd be aiming. I guess it's the only real option if you want to continue your upgrade cycle. So I'm not totally against it. I'd be a little bit worried with Gardner if he's not named this week, what that means to his spot in the side. But of all the options, that's probably the one that I prefer.
Yeah, I think if they're all not named, like, and Naish is named, that's when, you know, Naish obviously becomes a heap more attractive. You might even consider Robbie Young at that point. I'd be very, very nervous about trading in guys who are not going to get games. Probably Gardner's maybe the only exception, and even then I'd still be concerned with doing that. I'd almost rather take a fresh debutant.
That's what I was going to say. I think a debutant at that point is probably preferable. Yeah, I think I agree there that Gardner I can see coming back in, but if Bewley's dropped so soon, touch wood, given I also went a week early on Bewley, I think with the Harley Bennell and Stephen Hill pushing for selection, well, Hill coming back from injury and Bennell pushing for selection, it seems like Bewley might not get back in the team this year. Gardner, on the other hand, with the wraps that he got after game one, I can see coming back in if for some reason he was dropped.
All right. Now, let's move off the rookies. And unfortunately, you just don't have a heap of options. You'll just have to trade in the players that are available once the team sheets are named, and that's about as much guidance as Wilbo will give. I think the main point of the story, though, is just you've got to continue your upgrade this week. If you're not able to downgrade and the player you're going to trade out, it was going to be an out anyway, your option is either taking a donut with a player you don't trade out or trade in a donut that at least allows you to upgrade elsewhere. So as long as you don't think you're pushing your bench too far by trading in a non-playing player potentially. So if you already have Scott, Hinge,
Haitley,
then yeah, right. Then you might not push it too far. But otherwise, you might have to cop a downgrade, and that's actually not too crazy for the greater good of the long-term health of your team. Next question. This one's from David Bailey from Facebook, asking about Marty Hoare and whether or not to trade him out. His break-even is 39. Is he a hold if you still have 18 on field this week with him still on your team? He could potentially be a stepping stone to Whitfield once he gets back. And I actually really, really like this suggestion, unfortunately, because I don't have Hoare, but Hoare's been scoring so well. He's averaging 88 so far for the season. That's pretty damn good. With a break-even of 39 and with a premium target like Whitfield not being available for a little while, it almost seems like a pretty opportunistic move to hold Hoare for longer and then trade to Whitfield and get an edge on everybody else that had to trade Whitfield out and aren't able to bring them back in following the bye. So I hate saying that because I don't have Whitfield anymore and I don't have Hoare, but I actually think that's a pretty cool idea. What do you reckon, Bryce?
Yeah, I'm pretty jealous as well. I don't have Hoare in my side. And every time I see a score of 80, 90 plus come up for Hoare, I'm particularly jealous. So if I did have him, I'd certainly be trying to keep him. Like you said, saving him for an upgrade to Whitfield later on seems like the perfect move. The complicated factor comes in, I think, if you aren't going to get up to 18 players and you need to use him somehow in order to get up to that 18, I think that's where it gets a little bit tricky. But you'd probably have to consider the player that you're bringing in order to get to that 18. Are those points going to be worth it in the long term, or is holding onto Hoare going to be the best move? So,
yeah, look, I would only hold Hoare if I didn't have 18, if you were going to struggle to complete your team anyway. So if you're going to struggle to upgrade to a fully premium team, keeping Hoare at D6 and waiting for an opportunistic side swap down the road seems like a pretty good option. But apart from that, if you're struggling to get to 18, Hoare's, at the end of the day, not a top six premium defender. This is your chance to trade him out. So I'm not wed to holding on to him. I just think it's a pretty good opportunity to do so if it works for your team.
The other thing to consider as well, this week doesn't seem particularly heavy on backline premiums either. So
yeah.
Jake Lloyd's the only one in my team. West Coast have the bye, so Shannon Hearn is on the bye as well. And then probably Tom Stewart's really the only other one I can think of that's from these six teams. So it seems like a good opportunity to hold on to Hoare if you can manage it.
All right, next question. Now we're getting to trade-ins, and first up, a bit of strategy. This question is from Ben Tab 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 on Twitter. Cash generation is really poor in his team. Does he go for three cheap upgrades and complete his team, or get proper premiums and hold one rookie in his team, like Naish, until he can finish that last spot? This is tough because I don't know if there's a clear answer to this. And I know a lot of people are contemplating what to do in this particular scenario because they're facing the exact same challenge. Now, I've previously talked about just hitting the premiums that you can and taking a punt that way. And I don't think that that's changed too much just because we've hit the buys. So I would say take a risk on a gray type. Take a risk on, you know, a Rowan Marshall even at 460K so that you can finish your team. I think what you would really notice is a Naish potentially, you know, throwing out the odd 30 here or there when every other team is completed. At least if you pick up a gray, like what's the worst that could happen? He doesn't actually provide value and he continues to average 80, but the upside is that he does and he hits that. Whereas with Naish, like you're almost conceding that you're like, well, I can't get whoever I want, so I'm just going to have to almost absorb a loss of a rookie on field. And there's just no way a rookie averages close to premium type numbers. So I'd rather take a concession on a value premium rather than take a concession on a rookie and not completing my team. All right, next question. This one's from Paul Mottman. Getting to some actual players now for some trade-in targets. Now, obviously, we're going to spend a bit of time talking about the top-end options, and we'll throw in a few smokies at the end there. But this first one's from Paul Mottman. He's asking about Luke Ryan versus James Sick Dog Sicily. So, yeah, they're the pretty much clear standout targets in the back line this week. I think the next closest is JJ, who's averaged 95 so far and presents a little bit of value. But these two are clear, looking like top six defenders. Who do you like out of those two?
In my team, I already have Sicily, traded him last week, and I was also considering Luke Ryan at the time. I think that they're both are pretty good options. They're kind of a different scoring profile. So Ryan tends to have put in the stinker, but can also put in some higher scores. So he's had a 156, a 145, and a 131 this season, but he's also had some low scores around the 78, 80, 85 mark. Sicily seems to be a bit more consistent. Most of his scores have been between 90 and 120, but averaging a little bit less than Ryan. Sicily is also a little bit cheaper, so I guess if we're going for some value, we're a little bit short on cash generation, then I'd probably favour the Sicily option.
I've got Sicily ahead of Ryan. I think most people would consider Sicily as slightly underperforming. He's still averaging 100 for the season. We've seen his potential to average 110 in stretches, and his upside's just so high. Luke Ryan obviously has that huge scoring potential as well, but I think most people would consider Lucas to be almost done better than people would have expected so far for the season. So based on that, like if a bloke's done better or at about what people expect and he's done 105 compared to a guy who is potentially a little bit unders and he's at 100, I think I'd take Sicily. He's potentially more likely to burn you with a 110 on the run home than Ryan. Price points are another big one. And then the last one is Hawthorn actually have a really tough draw on the run home, which sucks in almost every other position. But when you're in the back line, playing as a key back / intercepting back, then actually having the ball come into your area lots of times isn't the worst thing. So I've got Sicily for that, for those reasons. But could be splitting hairs here. You could get to the end of the season or you'd be talking about a 20-point difference or something like that. Faz?
It's probably going to come down to price for me. As with many of the listeners that are sending questions this week, I'm really struggling to generate the value. So despite it not being a huge difference, that $30,000 in price, you know, the discount you get on Sicily is probably going to be enough to convince me. The issue, though, I just, you know, can Sicily finish a season without whacking anybody?
That's a good point.
That's my concern, is that if there's one thing he's shown, it's a consistency to be an absolute moron. He just whacks people when there's an umpire 2 meters away from him. He's just got that white line fever, which probably is a big part of why he's such a good player. But I think we've been this far into the season, he's played every game so far, and prior form says he can't get through a whole season without whacking anybody. So that's my concern. But I think that there's probably at a $30,000 discount and probably, I'd say, higher scoring potential with Sicily, is probably enough that it'll push me over the edge and I'll pick him and just watch this space. In a few weeks' time, I will be here cursing him out for another brain fade.
All right, next question. This one's from Twitter, from at McConnell Brock. His trade this week is between Dunkley and Daniel, but he can't decide between the two. Which doggy does he trade in to finish his forward line? I think Dunkley has the chockies slightly, ever so slightly, on Daniel, but they may as well have averaged the same thing. Price is a pretty big factor, though. Daniel's only at 484K, whereas Dunkley is sitting at 556. Having said that, if you look at most recent form, Dunkley definitely started the first six rounds pretty cold. His last five have delivered four scores above 119, which is huge. So he's definitely ramping up in terms of his scoring, which is something to keep in mind. Faz, you are a Daniel but not Dunkley holder, and we're the flip side compared to you. So what do you reckon, mate? Would you do Daniel again, or would you Dunkley it if given the
I'm feeling pretty jealous, let me tell you that. Okay. I think that the difference between these two players for me is that It seems like Caleb has a pretty hard ceiling on his scoring, that you'll be watching the game and the commentators are sort of saying, you know, career high disposals here for Caleb Daniel. And I'm getting pretty excited hearing that, and I log on and check the scores and he's got 105 or something.
Yeah.
So somehow he does those little chip possessions, I think, which are not worth all that much.
The long kicks are worth heaps in Supercoach. Mm. So even though he's really effective with all his kicks, sometimes his kicks only go 25 metres. And they count that the same as the kick going 15 metres, you know, like even though it's effective, even though it was a really good kick, even if it was a hard option that he had to take, like I don't know if they factor all that in. They go like 50-metre kick, ding. Mm. Shannon Hearn, have 150 points. Meanwhile, Caleb Daniel always uses the ball perfectly, but to targets that are really close, maybe you don't get as many points.
So so I think, you know, price not being a factor, which is a pretty silly thing to say at this time of year, I would go Dunkley 10 out of 10 times. But the concern I had when I brought Caleb in was whether this was a role that was going to continue to produce the scoring that he showed at the start of the year. He had a pretty good start. And luckily for me, having brought him in probably around 5 or 6, I think we've probably got enough runs on the board now that we can say it's not just a little flash in the pan bit of scoring. So I think if you bring in Caleb thinking he's a 95 to 100 averaging player, I think he's going to deliver on what you're purchasing. Dunkley, I think, has a much higher ceiling. It's just whether you can really afford to, you know, get the guy at 550 plus at this time of year. I know that I'm really hunting around the value, and it's probably only in the midfield that I'm looking to spend that sort of cash. In the forward and back line, I'm probably trying to find some more value.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward from my perspective. I think if you've got the money to spend, you go after Dunkley. I think that Caleb Daniels is still averaging around 100 for the season, and he looks pretty consistent in the role that he's playing. But since Dunkley's moved into that midfield, he's been averaging up 110 plus like a pure midfielder. I know that Wallace has been out of the side for a while, and that's helped his scoring. If Wallace comes back in, that could affect him down the track, but I think that they're pretty keen on him in the midfield at the moment, and as a Dunkley owner at the moment, I'm pretty happy. So if you have the money, I think that I'd want to go and try and get him.
All right, next question, Bryce. This one's again from Blue, our patron, asking about Robbie Gray. You reckon he's going to play more in the midfield? How do you see Robbie Gray and his risk profile at this point?
So I think that with Robbie Gray, his scoring is pretty dependent on his role in the team. He seems to have had a couple of roles in the midfield of late since coming back from injury, but that's also coincided with Ebert and Wines and also Rocky being out for a game. These guys are probably going to come back into the side soon. I know that Wines played the Sandful last week, and I think he's lined up for another game there as well. The same goes for Ebert. I think that he's playing Sandful as well this week. Rocky's coming back into the side. When Robbie Gray had a midfield role, he was scoring the last two games, averaging 106. But prior to that, with the role majority forward, he was averaging about 77. So he's currently priced at about an average of the 80s. So if he goes back to the forward line, you're getting what you're paying for him. But if he continues that midfield role, you get him at about 20 points under that average. So it all depends on whether we expect him to continue that midfield role. I think that as soon as those other midfield types come back in, he'll head back forward and will continue his early season scoring. He's a value option. It could work out. I'm probably not keen on the option myself, although if you need the cheap option, you're going to get what you pay for at least.
Yeah, I think the truth is, looking at the players that are available off the bye, even though I'm not thoroughly confident in his prospects at that price point, like you're going to struggle to pick a better option. And you're going to have to stomach some risk if you're taking a cheaper option. So no issues with picking Robbie Gray. The good thing about Robbie Gray is when he scores big at least. So, yes, he could absolutely score 40s, 50s, 70s in the forward line. But when he's playing in the midfield, you're not talking scraping 100 you can very often go 120, 130 to help balance that out. And I'd have no issues picking him up if you needed a bargain at that price. I don't think I'd extend to pick up a seventh forward if you're in that particular position, if you've already finished your team. But I certainly, put it this way, I'd be as happy having him as Billings in my side at the moment. And Billings at 440. And Faz just dropped his head. There's a head few drop. Of us with Billings. all right. Before we go to underrated v overrated, we got a question from at Martin Walsh 06 asking about the best trade-in targets off the buy. So I'm just going to mention a few blokes that we haven't quite discussed yet that could potentially be trade-in targets. I'm going to rattle them off fairly quickly. So you've got JJ in the back line as your third option for a backline premium at 476.7. He's previously been able to average 95 before, but he also has some downside. He could absolutely average 85 for the run home, so just be aware of that. Faz has previously had him in this side. It didn't work out too brilliantly. At 476, you're not necessarily getting the discount to make him tempting, but he's an option there. In the midfield, we didn't cover the midfield options for the show this week, but you've got Fife at 606, McRae at 574, Bontempelli at 543, and Zach Merritt at 565. All four, I think, are very sound options, all very good chances of averaging 110-plus for the run home. McRae, based on his potential, looks like the best quote-unquote value. Fife, you would think, would be the highest scorer out of the four of them. And if you want some value, I actually don't mind Bontempelli at 543. In the forward line, you've got heaps of options. We've already talked about Gray, Dunkley, and Daniel. If you needed to go more unique, there are a few other options, including Walters and Mundy for Frio, who are both averaging about the 99 mark. Both quite expensive, though. Walters at 500 and Mundy at 550. So unless you particularly like them, I don't know if I'd necessarily go there. But Rowan Marshall at 462K is definitely still very well priced. He's averaging basically close to 105, especially in the more recent weeks. I think his last score was a 139 after a few scores that were slightly lower, but you're still talking in the 70s and 90s because he's a ruckman. So he's definitely one that, if you're looking for value, certainly qualifies. And then, for a rolled gold option, of course, you got Boak coming off the bye as well for anyone looking to splash a bit more. And even then, he's not that much more expensive. He had a poor score here or there, so he's dropped to 518. And he's almost the value pick based on his average for the forward line this week. All right, with that, let's go to underrated v overrated. This question here came from JP Royden on Facebook. Is Heaney now classified as a player that we need to upgrade or hold? Now, I feel a lot of people aren't exactly sure where Heaney's season's going to continue to go. The fact that Sydney have started to win games, certainly promising. Franklin is back, that's certainly promising. Bryce, what do you reckon? Underrated or overrated? What are you going to do with Heaney?
If you've held him this long, I mean, this is what we said, hold him to the bye, reassess, see where he's at. But he's kind of at that, he starts to score well as soon as we're ready to trade him out. And so he's been a bit of a roller coaster. Like you said, Sydney played well on the weekend and they won. But he's back in the side. That frees up Heaney into the midfield a little bit. I've got Heaney in my side, so I've ridden the roller coaster since round one. I don't think that I have enough trades to be wanting to move him on. If I happen to be short of my 18 players on field this week and I didn't have the ultra primo forwards such as your Boak and your Dunkley, I might be tempted to move him on in order to get my side up to 18 this week. And if I didn't have any other opportunity to get those guys in, this presents an opportunity. But personally, keen to just ride him out for the season is probably the position I'd take on Heaney at this point.
Certainly seems like a luxury upgrade in my book. I just don't think that we have the quality this year in the forward line. I'm just having a look now at the top averaging players. I think Boak, Kelly and Dangerfield are probably the standouts, that they're all respectively averaging 112, 108 and 108 for both Kelly and Danger. Then you drop down to Dunkley at 102. I think the way he's turned around his season, he'll probably categorize him in that top four group. But then it sort of drops down. Caleb Daniels, actually the fifth highest ranking player right now at 101 points per game. And Isaac Heaney's at 91. But I can see him improving a little bit over the second half of the season with Buddy back in the side. So I think that probably agree with you there, Bryce, that unless it's sort of a Heaney to Boak type trade that gets you up to 18 players this week, then outside of that, I don't really see a trading out Heaney to be the pick. I think that most teams have bigger fish to fry in terms of the holes in their side, and I think you'd just back Heaney in to turn it around in the second half of the year.
I actually have him as slightly overrated. I think if you actually look at his average from round six, the guy's averaging close to 80. That's now across seven, eight different rounds now. Having said that, you know, I agree with you, Faz, in the sense that, yeah, so what? We've overrated him, but he's in our teams now, so yeah. You kind of just got to stomach it. I think the silver lining is you look at his next four games, actually pretty exciting from a scoring point of view. You've got Hawthorn, you've got Gold Coast, you got Essendon, and then you got Carlton. So in terms of a run to come up against, that's actually not too bad. And hopefully he starts turning some stuff around, especially with Buddy back in the side. Three of those games are also at the SCG, which is another tick for him. And some of the niggles he had at the start of the season, you would think the bye would only help. Having said that, Heaney's still the bloke that if I could trade out this week, I probably would. I'm in a bit more of a rare scenario where I've got seven premium forwards because I traded a Darling type in at 320. So that's another reason why I'm potentially looking at that. So I have no issues with trading Heaney out per se, but I just agree with Faz. It wouldn't be a lot of teams, unfortunately, with the luxury of being able to do that, especially with the upcoming run. All right, let's finish up with some captaincy options. I've done a bit of research again this week, so I'm going to rattle a few off and then get your thoughts, gents. My first vice captaincy option for the week is Rory Sloane against Richmond. 140, 141, and 96 is last three. Richmond have been struggling against the top teams. I think they've lost to GWS, to Collingwood, and to Geelong by 40-plus points each. And Adelaide have definitely been firming up as stronger contenders for the eight. So potentially Sloan might have a bit of a good run there. And then my second backup for him is Fife as a vice-captaincy option against Port Adelaide. His last five against Port Adelaide have been 122, 141, 112, 117, and then 75. So 75, not great, but four out of his last five, the tons. So that's pretty good. In terms of captaincy options, this week I think the better captaincy options almost. Unfortunately, that game just comes late, and that's the Carlton-Western Bulldogs game on the Saturday night. You've got great options there. Marcus Bontempelli against Carlton, his last four, 120, 145, 124. And, of course, the two sides played each other in round five this year where he scored 104. Paddy Cripps would be my second backup option after a huge weekend. His last three, 143, 106, and he scored 110 in round five against the Bulldogs. And then McRae, the final option there, 121, 141, 110. He scored 97 in round five. So I think at the start of the season, I probably would have had McRae first, but I have some question marks about how much of the pie he's continuing to get. And Bontempelli just seems the type that, you know, matches up quite well on Carlton. I think he'll struggle to have somebody continue to go with him when he moves into the forward line, which is why I have him slightly rated above. What do you reckon about those options, Faz?
I like Cripps as the backup captain. Off of 194, that's pretty insane numbers, and I will be chasing last week's points, I'd say. And unfortunately, I don't have Sloan, so I'm thinking Fife is probably going to be my option. So not too outside the box there with Fife and Cripps. Just be careful there. It's a pretty quick turnaround, it seems, with the between the Frio game and the Carlton game. Probably only half an hour or so to make the change there. So if that's what you're looking at, just be vigilant on Saturday evening.
I guess without any of the ruckmen this round, we're forced to look into the midfield. So I pretty much echo those thoughts on VC and C options. Personally, like the idea of a Fife VC into Cripps. If I was looking for a bit more of a unique option with the Bulldogs playing the Blues, if you had Dunkley in your forward line, he could potentially go large against them. But, yeah, probably for me, I'll play the safe option and go Fife into Cripps.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much, gents, for a great ep. For our listeners, long story short, we spent a bit of time, but you're trading round 12 by premiums in for round 13 by premiums. That's all the signs that
take,
you need.
Take the value, I'd say.
Yeah. Any final words, Bryce?
No, just a couple more weeks of buys and then we get our full teams on the field. So, yeah, just a couple more weeks to get through and the scores will go up. So hopefully everyone is heading towards close to full premium sides by the end of it.
Guys?
Yeah, just keep your chin up out there, I think. It's been a bit of a rough trot, I think, for the community, but the buyers tends to be when we do best, and you're really not going to see the results of that until the buyers are all finished. So even if you had a poor week like Bryce and I did this week, I think just stick it out, keep to the plan, and we can hopefully have a nice run into the end of the year.
Yeah, and if you're nervous about having Gorn and Grundy out this week, just imagine the people who did zero buy planning for round 13. Mm. So hopefully we do a bit of catching this week and reap some benefits from that. And with that, we'll sign off for the week. Thanks, gents. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.